Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent but curious young man, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my friend Richard.
Except today, we have a little shake-up to this form.
What shake-up?
Well, Jamie, if you looked to your left, which, that's right, we have a guest here today.
A lady in my bedroom?
Oh, I never...
Yes, we have a special guest, Steph Baptist, who is a local Toronto counselor and counselor for a sexual health information line, and is a all-around great lady and cool friend.
That's and right. You have to decide if I'm really a lady. That's up to you. We'll find out.
Oh my God, I'm already learning.
It's like a parlor mystery.
Yeah. This week, as you've probably discerned from our guest, we are having a sex explained.
That's right. We're taking a break from the heady political policies of the world, the happenings of Canada's legislature, the ins and outs of American health insurance
That's
to
right.
just get straight to our dangly bits.
That's right.
We're hanging up our dangly bits, however they roll. However they dangle.
Yeah, however they decide. We're hanging up our political newsman or woman hats, tucking into bed, turning the lights down, and enjoying a little bit of sex information.
Getting to the ins and outs.
That's right.
Ooh, I see what you did there. Yeah, so basically Jamie and I are going to just straight up undo the damage done to us in our early adolescence and all the misinformation that we've absorbed and inhabited with Steph here. And yeah, we're looking forward to learning how wrong we've been all these years.
That's right. I'm very, very excited for this because this is actually going to be our first ever series in which we, as it turns out from my initial meeting with Steph, the world of sex is far more complicated than I thought, and we cannot explain all of it in 1 hour and a half to 2 hour podcast or whatever this thing is.
To be fair, Jamie did learn everything he knows about sex from Japanese dating sims.
That's right.
Where it's like you just buy escalatingly expensive gifts, and then eventually you see a single still image of breasts.
Oh, man. Boy, oh, boy, was it worth it. It truly was the Scientology of my libido.
Oh, boy.
So, what do you say we hop into this?
I say we play the theme song.
Okay. Boy, what a theme song.
Oh, man. It warms my heart every time.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jamie, why don't you do what do we want to ask first?
Okay. I think this episode is going to be surrounding, as discussed with Steph, the definition and foundation of sex, sexual health, and sex life. So I guess the first thing we're going to go into right across the plate, the definition of sex and the definition of, open quote, close quote, good sex.
I'm scared. I'm scared I have it wrong. I'm nervous for what I'm about to learn.
Can I make an observation before I answer the question?
Of course. Yes.
Watching you two do your intro is a little bit like being at a threesome. Somebody told me that being a guy at a threesome with two women is a little bit like playing double dutch. You're just waiting for your turn to jump in. You're never quite sure when to do it.
Oh, wow.
And that's what this is. So thanks for the question.
Well, you're
I can
welcome.
Jump in.
I take it as a compliment, and
totally.
It gives me complicated feelings that I don't dislike.
That's going to be the tagline of this whole episode, I'm sure. Yeah.
So what is sex?
What is sex? Yeah.
Can I bring it right back to you? How would you define it based on that tortured upbringing of yours?
Wow. I guess for me, my initial feeling, and I'm probably going to immediately go back on this, my initial feeling was like, no, yeah, see, immediately I turn around. I was going to say something along the lines of penetration, something along sort of, but that implies man and woman. I completely backpedal now.
Fair enough.
Intimate, close, open, naked, both physically or metaphorically. Binding of two people, I suppose, in a physical way, is how I would describe sex.
Emotionally naked. Yeah. I like this.
That's funny. I went through that exact same journey. I was raised by a scientist. So I was like, yeah, it's when a penis goes in a vagina.
Yeah.
That's the definition of when it happens. But then I went through the exact same thing where I went, wait. There's all kinds of things that we would consider sex that completely are not encapsulated under that definition.
Yeah.
And then I do. And then you end up somewhere like the opposite of the science definition, where you're bodies joining together
in a fit of passion,
sharing energy.
Yeah. You know when you're like pretending to be an apple tree, and they're pretending to be a sunflower. Yeah, that's it.
That's sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, you guys have a lot still to learn.
Steph. Okay. Tell us, what are sex?
Wait. The apple tree sunflower thing, that's not sex?
So, okay, I'll come back to that. Okay. And I'm not coming back to birds or bees either. I am coming back to science.
Okay.
Because I would say the previous generation of sex educators were all about body science. Mm-hmm. That's how they made it safe for folks of various religious backgrounds. That's how they made it okay for parents to know their kids were having a sex lesson at school. They talked about body science. You just need to know how yours works and how it interacts with others, and if it's going to make a baby, you need to know how that happens. I think we've totally gone to the emotional place. Sex means different things to different people because they got different bodies and they got different reasons for being there, and making a baby is not most people's primary goal when it comes to having sex. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons we mislead kids with.
Yeah.
Sex is for babies.
I found that's a very strong theme in my sex life, is that we are very desperately trying not to have a baby.
And then, when people want to have babies, that's when they start paying attention to menstrual cycles and all kinds of other things. Infertility.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to think of it, though. Like, a lot of what we're given and a lot of our the way we engage in our sexual health is like desperately trying not to have a baby and desperately trying to make sure nothing burns.
Yeah. At any point. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Also, this is a
burning's
good time.
Burning's a good indicator of problems.
Yeah. This is a good time for me to throw in a disclaimer for my mom, who is for sure listening. Here we go, Mom.
And it wasn't your fault. You did the best you could with what you were told.
That's right.
Hey, you know, I do have to come back to burning, actually, because the most important thing to tell anybody about STIs, sexually transmitted infections, is that burning, we think of that as the first symptom, but the most common symptom is having no symptoms. So I just have to put that plug out there as a sexual health educator. People need to know this.
Wow. That's terrifying.
Most of them are asymptomatic.
I bet that does a lot of good for like really neurotic people.
I can assure you, some of the folks I talk to on our information line, it is not about a diagnosis. It's actually about anxiety. Hmm. It's about unlearning stigma and shame and silence and all the other things that have made sex kind of rotten for them.
Yeah. Hmm. So let's roll back and plug back into that first question. So if you were pressed to define sex for somebody under where you're at now currently with how you talk to people about it, what kind of stuff would you say?
Well, I was going to go to the dictionary. I was getting online and I thought, well, that's an important point right there. When you go online to look up anything about sex, you're going to get a lot of American sources. Hmm. And I think it's important for us to look at Canadian ones. Whether you get chlamydia on this side of the border or that, doesn't really matter. It's the same. But we do have different treatment protocols.
Yeah.
We definitely have different values at the national level around sex and sexuality. And Canadian sources are just going to be most relevant to the folks who need it.
Obviously sex and especially educational material about sex is so politicized everywhere that it occurs. And I mean, like, yeah, would you want to get your sex information from the country where literally today, like, a guy put a proposal in the Kentucky legislature that people can access Medicaid if they, like, earn points by, like, attending stop smoking classes and volunteering for stuff. Like, you have to earn your Medicaid insurance by, like, doing good things for society. Anyway, that's, like, some fucked up values right there.
Right. It's problematic, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, how that one looks in practice is going to be problematic.
Yeah, I don't want to see that bingo card, you know what I mean? Right. So it's like, I just need to volunteer for the YMCA 5 more times and I can finally get my cancer treated.
If I survive through the fifth week of my volunteering. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
You need to be careful of what sources you do consume when you go looking for stuff.
So that's part of it. And also, just that sex is hard to define. When I went looking for it, I went to my favorite book for kids, Perfectly Normal. It's Perfectly Normal. They don't even come at a definition of sex. They only say everybody has a different definition of the activities they want to include. They take different meanings from it. And I think that's kind of the most important thing, that there's no one answer to the question, what is sex?
Right.
Because there's maybe some general public opinion that it is about penetration, like you said at the beginning, but that does imply penises and vaginas. And I can tell you a lot of same-sex couples are having great sex and they might not have both of those in the room.
Right.
And trans folk might have some combination of all of that going on if they were born with an intersex condition, right? So genitalia is only one part of sex. And I don't know where else you want to go with that. Genitalia is kind of fun. I think what it does lead me to is, what is your favorite slang term for sex?
Favorite slang
term?
Favorite
in the sense that, like, when
I use it most often, or I get the most joy out of saying it.
Okay, that.
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
All I can think of are horrible ones that I, that I literally never use.
This is exactly my point, because the one that comes to mind for me is bumpin' uglies. Genitals are not super beautiful in a lot of people's opinions. Yeah. I happen to disagree, but that's okay. Lots of people find it kind of yucky. And bumpin' uglies is great because it's gender neutral, but it's problematic. It's not sex positive at all.
The one that is like fixated in my mind right now is that really old fashioned one where it's like making whoopee.
Making whoopee.
You hear that?
Oh, see, now I like this actually.
It just seems
fun.
It's sort of nonsensical to me though. It's like, what does that even mean? Like, what, break that phrase down. How is that related to reality?
Oh, see, I happen to love it.
It works for you. It makes sense.
I happen to love it. And here's why. I saw Dan Savage speak recently, one of the biggest columnists on the topic.
Totally.
And he said, we just got to get past this procreation piece. Sex is for fun. Right. That's why most people do it. It's just, it feels good. And making whoopee sounds like something fun to do.
Yeah. Wow.
And in fact, if you put some whoopee, which is what my ex-sister-in-law used to call whipped cream, in the mix, you're having a very good time.
Right.
Interesting.
Although some people think it smells like baby vomit pretty soon, right? Because it's made of cream.
Right.
Whatever.
And then plus the lactose intolerance. You know.
There is
a big issue.
Yeah.
Wow.
Whipped cream canisters.
I always found, going back to the bumping uglies bit, and sort of like sliding is very visual, but kind of, here's my issue with it. Because I often think of sex as kind of, at least the way I have sex, as kind of a ridiculous thing in that, like, you know.
You're wearing a clown outfit.
Yeah, wearing a clown outfit.
There's a series of practical jokes and catfalls.
I can't,
and
I can't finish unless there's like six or five people in the room applauding.
You're going to get a lot of dates out of this podcast.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, but like, you spend most of your time hiding a very specific part of your body, and then like once every so often you and another person get together, take off all your clothes, jam those parts of your body together, and then like wiggle it around like the universe is gonna end tomorrow.
Jam is such an amazing word. The Space Jam song is what's in my head right now.
Yeah
go there.
Yeah.
Is it relevant, the Space Jam song?
No.
I want to hear it.
No, it's just, I bet it
wanna
plays
get
when
up, want to jam now. Got a real thing going now. Welcome to the Space Jam.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to talk about that. That was important that you just said, this bit that you've been hiding all your life, you've been told from the day one, if it's in your bathing suit, it's not for anybody else, it's just for you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the bits that are most active in sex, but I think we gotta expand the definition past the bumping of the uglies to all the other sexy things people do together, and it might just be eye contact. Attraction is a sexual activity that has no touching involved necessarily. It brings up sexual energy, it brings up sexual feelings, and some good ones and some complicated ones. And undressing for somebody is very sexual. You'd never say that wasn't a sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, you just get naked beside somebody in a dressing room because you're sharing the space and it's not meant to be sexual. But there's so many good things we can do before we ever touch, before we ever get to penetration. And, I mean, everybody wants a hand job. Mm. Undressing somebody else, feathers, there's lots of things we could do, right, that don't have to come even to orgasm.
Right.
And we would all consider it absolutely a sexual activity.
So what I'm gathering then is sex is a huge topic, very, very all-encompassing. And so actually to say what is sex is probably a misnomer. And so what is there?
It's a great starting point, but there's no simple answer.
Right.
I think it's, yes, sexual activity. But again, I came across a great resource for today, Teen Health Source. It's something that Planned Parenthood does. And they've got trained teen volunteers who staff their chat line. It's really fantastic. And they were talking about attraction. And I thought, that's so important. You don't even have to, it doesn't even have to be an activity. It can just be a feeling. And it is sex, right? So I think by expanding our definition, we actually expand our options and our pleasure. It's pretty limited if pleasure only comes from penetration, right? Anyway, I'll leave that to you, as penetrative people, as insertive partners, the guys with penises to put in somebody else. You might disagree with me.
I have never been described that way before in my life.
I have been a receptive partner in most of the sex I've had, and so we have different perspectives on a lot of penetration, I suspect.
Wow. So what's... Okay, so...
Go ahead. It's funny. Just before we move on to the new topic, it's funny even just broadening the definition of sex to things like sexual attraction and eye contact. Like already, you're really unpacking a lot of what society accepts as sex, and then you're also kind of really pressing into the boundaries of what society deems like acceptable sexual activity. Right? It's like if you start to encompass those things in sex, things that are, you know, incidental and spontaneous and things like that. Even something like attraction, you don't always fully control, right?
At all.
So if you enlarge the definition that wide, and then you include the notion of, you know, monogamy, fidelity, things that many people have in their relationships still, you know, that's a it's a can of worms you open.
It is,
which could itself be a sexual act in Jamie's ridiculous prop comedy freak palace.
And I'm not all about killing worms, but you can imagine what a warm plate of spaghetti would feel like on certain parts of your body, right?
Oh,
so
boy,
we just leave that.
Yeah, I actually don't have to imagine that. That also happens when I have sex.
That was my American Pie sequel spec script.
Yeah, the Addams Family version of American Pie.
I gotta come back to social norms, because what you were just talking about was making me go there in my mind, because the definition of sex does bump us up into people's cultural expectations and stuff. You can think of a young person who's been raised to safeguard their virginity, for example, and say we're talking about a young woman, she's taken cock pretty much everywhere except her vagina and can still call herself a virgin.
Right.
That's silly to me, if that's the definition we're going with, right? There's been a lot of sexual activity in that person's life. And why do we hang up so much stuff on virginity? And yet, there's all kinds of tradition around that. And it is important. It is valued. It is. There are ceremonies to honor it, right? I don't want to dismiss that piece, but it's part of the definition.
That reminds me, is one of my favorite allegories is this, and I use it often to talk about religion, but most of all in the concept of tradition, is there's a young person watches their mother or father making the roast for family dinner, and they watch as the parent cuts off both ends of the roast and puts it in the pan, and they say, well, why do you cut off both ends of the roast? And you say, oh, well, you know, my mother used to do it, and it has something to do with keeping the juice in the roast. You should go talk to your grandma. So the kid goes to the grandma, says, why do you cut both ends off the roast? Grandma says, oh, my father used to do that. Something to do with, you know, the juice falls out and seeps back in the sides. You go talk to your great-grandfather. He's in the other room. Kid goes to the great-grandfather and says, why do you cut both ends off the roast? And the great-grandfather says, because when we were young, we were so poor, we only had one pan, and a roast wouldn't fit in it, so we had to cut both ends off it. And so now here we are three generations later still doing the same thing based on an old rule that had value at one point. And like, you know, like the idea of the definition of the word virgin for me, I mean, it even growing up, I was always like, it seemed to have somehow more weight, especially when referring to females than men. And I can understand from an old world point of view in which you're like, get away from my daughter, you know, like that's like a very easy way to describe
I have to sell her for some farms later
and like to equate her value and like and so for me I go, oh yeah, well it makes sense that like old world thinking would consider that vaginal sex, because like they're not thinking, they're hoping their kids never do anything else, you know,
totally
out of the question.
Oral and anal are absolutely more like a modern addition to this sexual repertoire. Absolutely, yeah. It's been happening throughout human history. But research has said there's an increase in the number of couples of any gender who are putting oral and anal sex into their regular repertoire, without a doubt. It's not something that historically was just considered sex, right? Mm. So already the definition is expanded just culturally right now. Mm. So anyway, not much more to say about that, except all kinds of great infections that we need to swab for, like chlamydia down your throat and because you swallowed infected cum, or, you know, anal cancers.
Right.
Thanks to HPV, which is human papillomavirus. So there's relevance, right? As soon as you expand the definition, you can expand the problems associated with your sex, too, potentially, right?
Keep an eye out for our new podcast, Infected Cum. It's just funny, like, because, like...
You gotta giggle, because you're uncomfortable.
We have such a low level of discourse about these things that, like, just hearing someone kind of casually say the term infected cum, like, it has visceral power over me.
Yeah.
Do your kids need to put this on pause?
Yeah, I need 20 minutes alone. okay, so maybe let's rebrand the term then. Instead of we're not just talking about sex, we're talking about healthy sex and open quote close quote good sex.
Yeah, and there's in fact a new website that's kind of great called The Sex You Want. And I think for me, that's maybe what I would define good sex as. Everyone's got different reasons for describing it the way they do. Mm-hmm. Somebody might really like pain and humiliation involved in their sex scenarios. Other people, that is the greatest nightmare, right? That is why they avoid sex, because of bad experiences that involve pain and humiliation. So I'm not going to tell anybody what good sex is.
Right.
That's for them to define, just like what is sex is up for everybody to define. But the sex you want, and for some people that's none.
Right.
Asexual folks get head attractions to other people's minds, they get heart attractions to other people they feel affection for, they just don't get a lot of pants feelings, they don't get a lot of pants attraction and heat of desire. Hmm. So asexuals on the spectrum of possibility, right? And those folks want to be acknowledged. They want to be visible in this very sexualized culture, you know?
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That raises such an interesting question, though, of being able to articulate the sex you want and even being able to understand it. Because, like, you know, when I was... I like to think this is my turn to apologize to my mom. Sorry, Mom. Like, I like to think that, like, now I have an idea of the sex I want. I understand myself. I've learned enough about myself to be able to communicate those things. But, you know, as a teenager, and as a, you know, in my early 20s too, like, your ideas and the information you've absorbed about sex and the images of sex that you have, which, like, let's be real, mostly come from porn. Mm-hmm. If you're a young guy in our time, certainly, probably a young woman also, they're like crazy, right? And you don't have a lot of tools to understand if that is what you want.
And especially communication strategies around it. Mm-hmm. When you grew up in a house where sex was not said except for a whisper or said only with a scowl, a sex not positive household where this is shamed and silenced, it's hard to have the words to talk to your partner about what you want, right? Mm-hmm. Many kids aren't even raised with proper anatomical words for those parts because elbow is so different from vulva. And if we could all be raised up with just an acceptance of our body, a lot of those conversations would be easier too, right?
I'm
sort of to hop on Richard's point. I think about my relationship to talking about it. When I was a teenager, it was like non-existent. You know, it's all I thought about. I thought of, you know, I read a thing when I was 16 that said the average 16-year-old boy thinks about sex something like 50 times a day or something. And I was like, that doesn't sound unreasonable, and actually some days sounds
probably
like a low ball.
Yeah.
So I was certainly not really, you know, I find it interesting that, like, that's the age that they're like, gonna try and teach me about sex stuff, because I'm like, I can barely like open my eyes, like I can close my eyes for a second and there it is, like hopping in my brain, you know.
Totally. Sex talk has to start early, and yeah. It has to be repeated often, and especially before adolescence, when the embarrassment sets in and you're less likely to listen to your adults.
And that should be normalized, you know. Totally. Like I feel like in the last number of years, I've had more long-term relationships interrupting. Like, I was single a lot longer in my early 20s. My mm-hmm. late 20s, I've spent more time in relationships. I'm single again. I'm finding that, like, I have the best, certainly not perfect, but the best communication I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And it's actually become an issue the other way, in which when I'm dating someone and they're not comfortable articulating to me what they mm-hmm. want, not necessarily in the moment or anything, but they can't talk about it, or they can't discuss it. I, and like 16-year-old Jamie would be like scandalized, but I, 28-year-old Jamie, I get kind of put off and maybe go, oh, you know, maybe this isn't a person that I want to be intimate with, because they can't even like talk it through mm-hmm. without it being strange. I think a huge part of that is A, growing up and having more life experience. I think another massive part of that is not having hormones shooting through my body all the time that are just like, just have sex. You know, what if you die? What if war happens tomorrow?
Totally.
You know, you know, totally. What if a tribe comes from across the hill and attacks my tribe? Yeah, we got to get our kids out now, you know?
Totally. Yeah. We got to come back to porn. You may not know this, but
we will always come back to porn. You take your time off of it, and you will always come back to porn.
Fair enough. Today is the end of a 4-day porn festival right here in Toronto. Right. Used to be called the Feminist Porn Awards. I'm not sure that's their exact title now, but there's still the focus on progressive and positive values around sex, and not just some. There's some really problematic stuff in mainstream porn, right? The point, though, of one of their panels this weekend was, are sex workers and adult film producers the new sex educators? Because so many people do get their first imagery of sex from porn. And it is not what most of us would consider just regular human intimacy, right? Like, and yet the more people who watch it, the more that gets the normalized version of what sex looks like for folks, right? So I'm interested to see how this plays out for young people coming to their sex lives.
Well, and I did read recently that I think YouPorn or Pornhub, whatever those are,
never heard of them.
they're starting a new project in which they're having a sex education part of their website.
Oh, I'm
it's
thrilled.
Probably Pornhub, because I mean,
I think
I don't
they're
know
both they're owned by
this.
The same
okay.
company.
Pornhub is the one that's very like they have really good publicity and good public relations, and they're the ones they publish like lots of stats about what people watch, and they're very engaged.
Right,
and
that's good.
Like they're not like a bunch of weird dudes with creepy mustaches in a van.
Right.
Like they seem like quite active and.
I'm glad to hear.
I think it might be
Pornhub.
That's
a big mainstream name, right? And if they're doing it, they reach a lot of people with that message.
Yeah,
we'll have to look
absolutely.
This up and update this.
I'm almost positive it's Pornhub, but I'm almost positive that they're the same company.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
Because you don't watch it, but you've heard that.
That's right.
It's an interesting. It is an interesting thing, though. I remember, like, you know, we are probably among the youngest people who grew up as teenagers with internet porn.
Yeah.
We're close to the youngest people, probably. Like, we were, like, you know, 14, and we would have access to it. Sorry, Mom.
Yeah.
And I remember...
Early adopters.
Yeah, that's right. And I remember there was, like, some articles and a lot of research that made kind of a splash a couple of years ago about the effects that watching porn has on your brain, like, in your attention span and your own mental patterns and things like that. And that kind of spooked me out of it. I rarely watch it now, as opposed to, you know, 10 years ago when I was like, you know, a lot.
I can say that it, you know, and not to be porn negative, but there are some problematic outcomes for folks who are watching too much of it. If it's interrupting your quality of life, making you late for appointments, making you miss family dinners and stuff, that's maybe too much porn. Mm-hmm. But what's also happening is a lot of guys especially are having a hard time getting erections, maintaining erections, and having satisfying ejaculatory arcs with real partners.
Yeah.
It's really having an impact on intimacy and connection and sexual satisfaction, ultimately.
Yeah, well, it's super stimulus. You know, it's like I was reading this thing about kids and sugar, like why kids love sugar. And it's because their brains are programmed to be like, you've got sugar, eat it. Mm-hmm. Because you're a baby and you need this to move around and have energy. So if you find sugar, eat it. But the thing is, we've now developed these kinds of sugars that are found nowhere near the wild, have they're like effectively drugs.
Yeah, and the body can't process them.
And it doesn't know the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I noticed that, like, if I'm in a porn period of my life and I'm watching more of it than I should, I find the extremity of the porn increases, just as you would a drug, I imagine. You know, you can't, it's not, it's no longer satisfying to watch the person strip. It's now they have to be engaged, and then
that's
next
exactly
time
the problem.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You need more extreme scenarios, and unfortunately, a lot of cases, younger actors to start filling the void because you're not getting the hit you used to get off simpler scenarios or whatever. And this is where mismatched porn interest can wreck a couple too, right? Like somebody who isn't seeing as much of it, all they want is a sensual massage video, maybe gets them in the mood, they're ready to roll. Mm-hmm. Somebody else wants something that absolutely freaks them out. We now have a couple not in crisis, but in conflict about what they want to watch and what turns them on. And the ick factor is really significant for some people. Porn makes them feel very uncomfortable, makes them feel threatened. And for them to be with a new partner who finds that something to get off to, that's uncomfortable, right? That's maybe unsafe for some.
And this might be a nice transition point into our second point of the podcast, in which I mentioned to Steph in an email that I was like, well, we'd like to discuss, you know, different kinds of sex, like recreation, procreation, and she very aptly put in, as well as domination and humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can talk about those four, like, I don't want to sound like those are the only types.
No, for sure.
Certainly I don't.
You heard it here. Those are the only types.
That's right. What is sex?
Yeah.
Procreation, recreation, domination, humiliation.
Yeah, if you don't believe that, then you'll go to hell. And make sure your kids believe that, too.
Right, Justin Trudeau,
immediately. I'm not totally comfortable with the terms I've come up with when we made that list.
Right.
I thought you made a great point about sex for procreation and recreation. And so I was going with the Asian thing, humiliation and domination. But even sex for power and sex for pain, those are things some people want. They want the power play. The kink community knows a lot about that and has found some really healing reclamation of difficult feelings through BDSM scenarios. But I guess what I mean is that parents might feel comfortable enough talking about the body science and that you have sex to make a baby and only with someone you love, which is not the whole story. So then getting the courage to say, oh no, sex is just for fun. Sex is good. Sex is healthy. We do sex because it's a great time. That's a harder conversation for a lot of folks to have with their kids. And then the very difficult one is sex is rape sometimes. Sex is not for pleasure. It is not for good outcomes. It's about entitlement and selfishness and hurt.
Right.
And so I guess any sex educator wants to prevent infection and they want to prevent unwanted pregnancy and they want to prevent sexual assault. But mostly we want to promote the good, healthy outcomes about sex. And that requires open communication. It requires all kinds of just good, healthy connection with other people, like you said right at the beginning.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Here's like a stupid person question, but I'll ask it anyway. Like,
since you're not a stupid person, it'll feel weird, but I'll listen.
And it just popped into my head now, but like, I guess this is a dumb question, but I will say it. Like, so like, is rape sex?
That's a really interesting question.
Like, at what point is it a different thing just because it involves penetration?
Right.
I think
that's a pretty common thought, that it's not a crime of passion. It's just a crime.
Right. Yeah.
It's an assault.
Right.
It's a way to hurt another person.
Right. Mm.
And it happens to have a penis involved.
We're mixed up. It's like that,
you know?
Body science thing, right? It's like, well, because if we're looking at it from body science, when the penis goes in the vagina, it's sex. It has to, right?
And it is sex. It's rough sex.
Right.
It's it's unwanted sex. Right. It's coercive sex. Right. It is criminal sex. Right. You know, it's illegal for a reason. And that's why we got to talk about consent, and that'll probably get us talking to the new curriculum here in Ontario, because luckily, even though it took a few extra years to get it on the shelf where teachers can offer it to kids, what was really great about that waiting period was that it put more consent content into the curriculum. Oh, and so okay. that's the biggest up.
Now, you're referring to, like, I remember this being in the news, but I didn't follow it that closely. There was, like, mm-hmm. a furor, kind of, over the new sexual health, sex ed curriculum.
And that came in two phases. Back in 2010, mm-hmm. a really well-researched document, a very responsible piece of pedagogy, was put in front of Ontario, mm-hmm. and Dalton McGuinty's government withdrew it immediately because the furor was so intense.
Right.
And that's what caused it to wait. But it meant that Ontario got really out of pace with other provinces. We were still teaching to the 1998 curriculum before everybody had an iPad, before everybody had such easy access to internet porn, and before puberty, the age of puberty has dropped. People are coming to it earlier in their lives. Research has told us this is happening.
Before they were clitorises.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The clitoris has evolved since then.
Nowhere in the early sex ed was it.
Please know that there's some sarcasm around that. The clitoris has been around for a long time.
It used to just be a footnote at the end of the presentation where it's like, we don't think the clitoris exists, but if it does, please tell us.
Touch it. If it does, lick it.
It was like the Franklin expedition to the North Pole, to the Northwest Passage. It's like there's like so many like Stan Rogers songs about men searching for the clitoris.
All for just one time.
Yeah. And lads don't go stampeding to the clitoris.
No, right. Unlike other episodes of this show, don't listen to anything I've said.
Now I kind of forget where we were going. Was there more you needed from me on an answer?
So in 2010, they withdrew it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So then in 2015, am I right? Oh my God, we are already in the second year of it in schools? Oh my gosh, I feel foolish. I need to be able to answer that immediately. I think September of this school year was unveiled.
This happens to us a lot.
If
it turns out you're wrong, we'll update it. We do that. We have follow-up episodes so we can tie these little loose ends together.
Our government at the Ministry of Ed did a really good job of revising it and speaking to even more experts to make sure they were putting the best practices in that curriculum. And as I say, there was Gian Gomeshi's trial happened in that time, so we were able to get more consent messaging into this curriculum. Mm. What hasn't happened as well is supporting teachers to teach the damn thing well. Because you can teach it very badly, very easily, because of your own discomfort level with it, right? And so I feel what I wish I was seeing was more opportunity to educate the educators. And that's happening. Toronto Public Health, for example, is doing really great workshops with teachers around puberty, for example. But yeah, one...
I'm getting this hilarious mental image of like the coach from like the football coach like reading from this like 14 inch thick binder trying to explain RuPaul's Drag Race so uncomfortable.
Okay, fellas.
But he's like he has to do it. He's legally obligated.
School board says we can't go into Sunday unless you all know what a drag queen is. I guess put on some lady clothes and there you are.
Here's some gold lame.
Faster. And that's okay.
God damn it, Williams.
Do you know, it is kind of important what you're saying, because the curriculum never does get quite that specific.
Right.
The teachers are given a series of prompts and some scenarios of questions kids might ask. They're not trying to pretend to be a grade 3 student. They're just saying these are the kinds of topics you might address to talk about gender identity, for example, or various sexual orientations. And it really is up to the teacher. They have a lot of freedom, which means they can speak to their community's needs. If their community is really struggling with some of these topics, they'll speak to them less. Because that's appropriate for their region, for their demographic. And I have heard, you know, it's in the hands of the jock often in a school. Like, I'm here because I'm good at badminton and basketball and whatever other sports, lacrosse. And talking about homosexuality, which is not even a word I use much anymore, talking about same-sex relationships or whatever else, just LGBTQ communities, is really challenging for some people, and in fact inappropriate in the mouths of some people, because they cannot speak to it in an honoring kind of way that talks to the same-sex parents that a kid in his class may have, for example. So anyway, getting the right information from the right source is crucial.
Right. Wow. Wow. I guess, yeah, maybe that's one of the issues I had. I didn't love the sex education program at my schools when I was younger. And in hindsight, it's hard for me to tell whether it was because of poor programming or whether it was for the same reason I didn't like math class when I was that
just
age. It was just school and I didn't want to listen. And that class in particular was a bit uncomfortable. But I don't think so. Because I do remember... We had our sex ed class, which was regular. We had that, for one semester in high school and maybe one semester in junior high. But there was one day, I went to Catholic school the whole way through, not to shit on the program, but there was one day where they had the whole grade 10 class or whatever in the gym, and this, let's call him like funky priest, comes in and talks to us about abstinence and about not having sex and... Yeah, and it always felt to me like my teachers were more on Funky Priest's team than on the other class. You know, it felt more like we're getting this rep out. Hey, kids, let me tell you. Well, sex is a fun thing, but you gotta be safe if you want to be a Christian.
Oh, my God. I so thought you were going to say Funky Priest actually handled it well, because I have to say, I have met some Catholic educators who do this beautifully. Yeah. I have read really important documents and seen great YouTube videos by Muslim educators who want to make sure we all know there's diversity in every group and religion doesn't have to wreck sex.
Yeah, and frankly, too, I think the Ontario Catholic system is very different than the Alberta Catholic system, which is like gay straight alliances in high schools are a massive political election issue in Alberta right now, because I'm sure you've been hearing a little bit about this, but there's Jason Kenney, who's like one of the Alberta conservative, he's the front runner for the leadership, wants it to be mandatory that if your child joins a gay straight alliance, the parents get notified in Alberta.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's the level of discourse in Alberta. It's a lot more regressive about that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's so problematic, right? Because that gay straight alliance might be the only place that kid feels safe, and home is where I feel the least.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And I don't want to shit too much on this priest guy, because I don't really remember it all that clearly.
Because he was funky.
He was funky.
Even though you remembered
it. I remember it. I remember thinking this guy's a real dink, he's but he did say one thing that sort of stuck with me, and I still carry as a bit of a virtue, which was, I mean, he was using it to reinforce a point that I didn't like, but I was able to see a little bit of silver lining, which was, he's like, think about every person you have sex with, that is an emotional and spiritual exchange with the person you're having sex with.
Sure is.
And the thing, and he's like, if you share that with someone who's shared that with someone, now all of a sudden you're sharing it four ways versus two ways and so on, 16 ways, and keeps multiplying, scary exponents. But I think, part of me is like, I can see you justifying that as like just have sex with one person and then you don't have to worry about it. I don't think that. I think there is credit to that. The only credit being, it's a big decision, and that everyone should be considered individually and should be considered with weight, because the more, just like the porn thing, the more you treat it in a laissez-faire way and as if it has no quality, the more it will begin to have no quality
and be laissez-faire. It does have an energy exchange, even if that's negative and it made somebody feel like shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that is important that we all are aware of that. And I think that's another good message from the new curriculum, not just that we are responsible to take care of ourselves, but we are responsible to others. As attentive partners, as decent human beings to get naked with, right? And those are the conversations I feel are sometimes missing. We're still talking to our daughters about how to stay safe, and some of them sound like slut shaming, and we're not necessarily having maybe as many conversations with our sons about how to be a respectful partner and don't raise a rapist, right? Yeah. And I know saying that I will offend the parents of sons potentially, but there is a heterosexual dynamic that's problematic, and we have to acknowledge it, that not all men are rapists, but most rape happens by men. And yeah. And if we were having more honest conversations about those urges, the 50 thoughts a day, mm-hmm. and where to put them that's safe for everybody around you,
yeah.
that would be helpful, right? To yeah. everyone's sexual health.
Well, not to tie too neat a bow on this thing, but like, you know, go back to the discussion of the word virgin. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was 16, even in my like hormone-driven years, thinking that's a bit of it. Like, that's a weird thing, hey? Is that like men are sort of supposed to lose their virginity as quick as possible and be as sexually promiscuous as they can, whereas women are supposed to hold on to that as long as they can.
How do those go together?
Exactly. My 16-year-old brain is like, I mean, adults say it, so it must work. But it doesn't. That the economics of that doesn't make sense to me.
And it denies the sexual drives of female people.
Yeah.
Or trans folk aren't even in this conversation, right? We have to acknowledge that too. And it also inflates the sex drive of some men. Some men aren't thinking about it all the time. They're really engrossed in work or whatever. It's just not that big a priority for them. So we have to be careful not to go to stereotypes and gender roles too much either.
Absolutely. And to me, but just looking at that like little comparison, it makes so much sense why the most common, like I feel like the most common thing is for men, like for men to be coached. Not most common thing to occur, but what sort of needs to happen is men being coached away from, like be more communicative, mm-hmm. be happier with not getting laid tonight, mm-hmm. you know, you are not entitled to sex, you know, like pulling that back, mm-hmm. because their whole life they've been encouraged to go mm-hmm. do that. And whereas the other way of women, it's okay for you to like sex, it's okay for you to go out and totally. And but you know, obviously, balance is key.
And we're just socialized to not have a good sexual connection, right? Somebody always wanting it. Somebody's job is to say no to it all the time. Like that, it's just not reciprocal. It's not that energy exchange that's healthy and good. Anyway, I don't have a whole lot more to say about that, but I did want to come back to abstinence, mm-hmm. because I think we need to take a harm reduction approach to sex, which is, you know, just don't do it, like just say no to drugs. Those are useless statements, because people are drawn to these things for some pretty powerful reasons, right? Especially the sex drive. And if you got big mental health issues and a bit of pot self-medicates you through the day, that's a legitimate coping strategy for a lot of people. So abstinence has never made sense to me, but the harm reduction approach to sex is important. Like, it's got all kinds of great outcomes, but it's got some negative ones. Let's be careful. Well, let's at least talk about what those are and give you some strategies for how to avoid them. And know that if you fall into some of those negative spots, that's just the human sexual life as it evolves over time. And we learn from our mistakes and we learn what we want, like you were saying earlier, Richard. Mm-hmm.
Right. So. Yeah. I had a point on that.
Richard, make a joke.
Make a joke, Richard.
Point or of your penis.
Yeah, we did it. We did it.
7 years of friendship.
And only two penises.
Only two penises. So far.
Well, yeah. This is just it. Aren't I making assumptions about what's in your pants?
Since 1998, a clitoris.
Oh, actually, that's a really good point. I just said something about making assumptions about what's in your pants. But EGAL Canada, Human Rights Trust, has a really great way to put gender identity in a really simple package. They talk about sex is between your legs and gender is between your ears.
Huh. Oh.
Because a lot of the definitions of what is sex equate the two. Sex is gender,
right.
But it isn't.
Right.
We know that now with more discourse around gender identity. It's not that being trans is new. You know, that's been in human cultures for eons. Two-spirit folks have been part of a lot of indigenous communities for eons. But this discourse is new. There's a lot of momentum around it. And I guess the important point to make is just that the way we express or perform our gender is different than the sex we may have been assigned at birth.
Right, right.
You know.
Okay, here's a question sort of on that topic.
Mm-hmm.
This has I was thinking about this over the last couple of weeks. How do I want to go into this? A person that I know in my life, although I'm not close with, mm-hmm. is recently undergoing charges with child pornography.
Oh, okay.
And it's close enough that I've had to sort of come to terms with, like, you have to like look at you know,
every interaction you've ever had with this
person. Yeah, yeah.
And your own choices. Sometimes it makes us reflect on those.
Exactly. Too. And, you know, I have to, and, you know, I have to have a discussion with my empathy machine in my body, you know, and go like, okay, you know, here's a challenging moment for you. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with friends the other day about, you know, a big discovery for me. I took women's studies in university before I got into theater school.
Okay.
Women's and gender studies. Mm-hmm. And so this is like a lovely return back to that. But I think, but in that class, and it's, you know, it seems so like prehistoric information now, but in the moment I was coming out of Catholic school, didn't like my sex education, and they were talking about sexuality as a gradient and gender as a gradient as well. Mm-hmm. Of like, you are, you know, we as humans have come up with these funny words like man and woman and male and female, and we have made them extremes, and sort of in more recent time we've been able to say, no, actually you are, like, let's say 75% heterosexual, or like, mm-hmm. the vast majority of people live somewhere in the mm-hmm. middle. Not to discount, I'm sure there are people who are 100% hetero and 100% homo.
Because there's extremes of everything.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. But the odds are that the vast majority of people live in that spectrum. On that point, we also have been raised with bias against homosexuality. Mm-hmm. So the odds are that everybody's percentage that they recognize is actually probably a bit further to homosexuality than they are even willing to admit to themselves.
We can't even get out from the social construct enough to know how many of us are pansexual, for
right,
example.
Right.
And I can define that term if we need to, but mm-hmm. finish your point.
You don't have to have sex with pans.
That's exactly right.
Boom, done.
And some people like pots, Richard. Let's not discount them.
That's right.
Listen, you stoner. Save it for 420 was 3 days ago.
If pans are your kink, I got no judgment.
And so I was, you know, I was at a party the other day, and it wasn't like a rager. Like, I wasn't bringing down the conversation. It was on point. But I was like, okay, now just for the sake of challenging our understanding of pedophilia, because we were talking about this guy, I was like, let's say that every human has a percentage in that realm as mm-hmm. well, and that, like, that may be much more of an extreme thing. Mm-hmm. Of like, everybody is, you know, most people are no less than 95% non-pedophilic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then this fellow lives somewhere, because I, you know, I don't know, unless it's a definite on or off button in the DNA, but I don't know, judging from the rest of the stuff, I kind of get the feeling that no, that's probably not it.
There's a lot of folks thinking pedophilia is an orientation.
Yeah.
That for some people, it just how they think, it's just what they're attracted to, and not because they were abused as children. There are a lot of folks mm-hmm. who have sex with children who have been mistreated sexually as children. Absolutely, there's a strong correlation. Mm-hmm. But they're wondering if for others, it is just like an attraction. You can't stop yourself being gay. You can't stop yourself being whatever.
That's right.
And pedophilia might be on.
There's a This American Life episode where they talk to a community of teenage pedophiles who know they are pedophiles and have like a kind of support group so that none of them act on their urges.
Yeah.
It's a super sad episode. You should listen to it if you haven't listened to it.
Yeah.
And access and opportunity is the biggest piece of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I'm alone with a little kid, I might do this, but if I'm not, I can probably keep that under wraps.
Well, and it's funny because the stuff in your head and your body is not inherently a criminal or immoral act. It's the thing about pedophilia is that it's the stuff that you have to do in order to act on it that becomes abusive and, you know, criminal, right?
And like, and so on this, if it's on this spectrum, but when I went to university and sort of learned of this gradient with sexuality and gender, I became immediately more, I'm trying to be more specific with the way I use the word empathetic and compassionate, and like, because I think there's a difference. But I've been trying to be more. I was like, okay, now I need to be way more compassionate, way more empathetic, mm-hmm. because I myself am on this same spectrum, and here I am just being biased against.
Yeah.
Like, I was never like faggot or anything like that, but like, you know, here I am. I'm recognizing my own bias on this spectrum.
Totally.
And the same thing sort of happened to me with this recent pedophilia issue. Is I go, okay, I don't have the same problem as this fellow. I don't think it certainly hasn't arisen yet. But I think, but now that I know we're on at least on the same scale, you know, I'm just blessed with being, you know, on the socially
acceptable
appropriate.
End.
Yeah,
exactly.
It just induces my empathy thing. Agreed. That being said, you know, I think just because something is natural, well, a big topic I'm big on now is just because something is natural doesn't mean it's moral.
No, agreed. You know,
and like,
yeah, we still need to protect children, well, even though there might absolutely. Be some people who come to these yeah. thoughts naturally. And I can say, having parented kids, they're delicious, they're beautiful, they're soft, they smell good, yeah. they're huggy, they're forgiving, they're beautiful people.
Yeah.
I understand attraction, but not in a sexual way.
Yeah.
And yet there are, well, I'm just one person on that spectrum of thoughts about children, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and in what way are we responsible for translating the urges that we feel physically and mentally into the real world, right? Like, if you had a serious rage problem,
yeah.
you're still responsible to not
harming people.
Hurting anybody.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And
yeah.
it's probably a similar, I don't know, moral equivalence there.
Without a doubt.
But no yeah. one's saying you're not feeling that, but you are still a responsible human being for your actions.
When I was reading about, and now this has just become the pedophilia podcast.
But that's our third podcast. Oh, keep an eye out for Infected yeah. Comes episode on pedophilia.
But I was reading about a virtual reality and the potential uses for that in treating pedophilia.
Okay, that's interesting.
And the article was contentious. You know, mm-hmm. I read through and I'm like, I'm an open-minded guy and I'm having serious challenges reading this.
I think we have to recognize that lots of aspects of sexuality bump us into what we've been told, bump and ugly, sorry, bump us into the stuff we've been told isn't okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm realizing maybe I am kind of okay with some of that, and not pedophilia. I'm always going to only be okay with consensual sex of any kind.
Absolutely.
And I think what a couple of the examples for me, I remember being so outside my comfort zone when I first started talking about trans issues. I thought, I've been seeing boys and girls on all the bathroom doors all my life. Like, what are you talking about? Trans is a real thing? What? And I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I've gotten very comfortable with that reality because I've also gotten to know individuals. I have increased my empathy by educating myself. And sex work as well. I was one of those people who thought, well, you'd never choose that line of work unless you were really messed up, or what, or how can there be healthy sexual outcomes in kink? It's like, it's pain and humiliation. And right. I think the more we understand of a something, any topic, and the humanity of the individuals who live that reality, we can expand our empathy for all kinds of stuff. But we tend to go judgment first because of what we've been told, wherever those messages came from.
And also sort of what we can perceive. You know, I think like, I've read and I kind of agree that I think one of the great ethical, like, arguments of me and Richard's generation is going to be gender and what that is. Because I even know, you know, I know people who are progressive, open-minded, sexual people that still look at the trans thing and go like, yeah, but it's an illness of some
that's
sort, or
real.
Like, yeah, it's not real. Yeah. It's kind of like depression, you know. It's like,
uh-huh.
it's not real. You're just looking for attention or whatever, you know. Because I can't perceive it, you know. It doesn't exist in my consciousness, inside my solipsist bubble. It's not
that's
real,
right.
you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you need to go to more than a couple hours of a workshop to really get your head around all that stuff, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Anyway, and even I read a really interesting guide for Muslim educators around the new curriculum, and one of the topics, it was a principal of an Islamic academy who wrote it. I'm sorry that I don't know the author's name offhand, but there was a part about intersex conditions, and it said, Allah does not make mistakes. So we accept that this child might exist with an intersex condition, and you would need to speak to an Islamic scholar to understand how to handle that reality. But they did not have much patience at all for intersex or for trans conditions that might arise at puberty. But the truth of the spectrum of intersex conditions is that they might be chromosomal and hormonal, and you don't notice them at birth. It's not about the genitalia as it presents at birth. It's about what happens at puberty when you start growing breasts you don't want because you don't think of yourself as a girl, you know? And so those are just as real, but they are invisible until puberty makes them very apparent. We've got an issue here. And so it takes a lot of education to be as empathetic as we need to be for the diversity of human sexuality.
Right.
Make a joke about that.
Diversity of vaginals.
No, I got the point of my penis. Very pathetic.
Great.
Great.
What do you guys say we call it a day on this one?
I think this is that's a good idea. It's a lot in my head. This is a phenomenal conversation. Thank you so much for coming in, Steph.
Nice to
be here. It means a lot.
We'll have Steph back on for a series of episodes about sex and bumping uglies and making whoopee.
That's right. We got two episodes coming down the pipe. They'll be coming over the next 15 to 16 weeks.
Super long timeline on these.
But we got sexual lifestyle as well as the legal aspects of sex coming at
getting to all of those.
In our next upcoming episodes. If you have any questions or comments or things you'd like to add, feel free to hit us up on Facebook, explain it to Jamie, Twitter, @explainjamie, our SoundCloud, which is maybe where you're listening to this, but if it's not,
SoundCloud.com/explainittojamie. Also, Steph, where can you be found?
Sex with Steph is a meetup. We got about 250 members, and even when 10 of them RSVP, maybe 2 of them actually walk through the door. So, you know, you'll find us online. There's also a Facebook page for Sex with Steph. It's a monthly discussion group. Chips and booze and cheeky conversation is what we offer on a monthly basis in the East End of Toronto.
Is there a cost? It's
$20 plus tax. If you bring a friend, you save $5. Whatever, you get a drink, you get some cheeky conversation and some open-hearted acceptance to whatever you're thinking about sexually. The last topic was sexual secrets, and I gave everybody the opportunity to talk about that vaguely, and every one of them spoke to it very directly, very honestly, very personally. Folks need to talk about these things. We need a safe space to feel we are allowed to talk about these things. So I'm hoping some of your listeners will check us out and get this face to face.
Talking about it is extremely valuable. Even in this conversation, I feel like the severely repressed part of me got a breath of air.
Good. I thought it got an ass kicking, but if it got a breath of air, then you can
go back and hold his breath for another 5 to 10 years.
I do feel like I need to say my parents did a good job giving me sexual health education, but you know, you can't protect us from everything. Teaches about everything, mom and dad.
Yeah.
No, and I gotta do the shout out to my mom and dad because maybe just my mom, but she was a registered nurse. She talked about sex and death and all of life's dramas. My high school breakup, as an example, just as part of life. Maybe she was a body science person, but she had the emotional component too. And I know it's a privilege of mine to be able to talk this comfortably about this stuff because I wasn't raised with a lot of hang-ups around my body, my relationships, my sex, and I'm grateful for it.
Well, it's beautiful that you get to pass that forward to people that need it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Steph.
If you have any questions, comments, get us. Go check out Steph's monthly meeting, Sex with Steph, East Toronto, if you're around. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next time on Explain It to Jamie.
Woo!